Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast number 634. This episode is brought to you by Xero. That's X-E-R-O, which is online accounting software and platform for your small business. It doesn't matter if your small business is brick and mortar or online, because it's all cloud-based, which means that you can manage your accounting anytime, anywhere from your Mac, PC, iOS, or Android device. Sign up for a free 30-day trial at Xero.com/podcasts and start managing your invoicing and get paid faster. Not only that, but Xero randomly selects 5 people a month who have signed up to receive a mystery box of goodies from Xero, plus from a company that already swears by Xero. So go to Xero.com/podcasts. Fun Comfortable Tour is coming back. Well, it's never really going away, but the next dates are in Chicago and St. Louis, and then New York, Boston, Philly, Ohio, I think. Am I in Ohio? Yeah, I think I'm in Ohio. Isn't that sad that I don't even... I'm going to put all these dates. They're all on funcomfortabletour.com. Maybe I should go to the site and see where the hell I'm going to be playing, because a bunch more are coming in. So if you didn't see a city on there and you're like, how come you're not coming here? The answer is I probably will be just later in the summer or at the end of the year. All those will be posted soon. But shows are selling out and we're adding second shows like in Chicago. So grab some tickets if you can at funcomfortabletour.com. And now for the Nerdist Community Board. I would definitely love to remind you that my good friend Matt Bronger, who is an amazing comedian who crushes when he's on At Midnight, has a comedy special airing tonight, Friday, the 6th of February, on Comedy Central at midnight. It's called Big Dumb Animal. So check that out, because I love Matt and more people should know who he is. Also, Kurt Braunohler's new show, Roustabout, episodes are available on cc.com. And then finally, the last entry in the community board, got a nice email at events@nerdist.com from a guy named Michael, who runs a comic book store in Grove City, Ohio. And it's about 8 miles south of Columbus. And he was having some problems keeping the store afloat, and then found out that he had to close the store because there was black mold in the walls. So he has a GoFundMe to try to move his comic book store to another part of town and put a performance space in there, kind of like what we do at Meltdown. But he seemed like a nice guy, and so I'm throwing him on the community board. Obviously, and I hope Michael doesn't take this personally, but of course we can make no guarantees about the stuff that... that we send out. We just read the emails, and when people seem nice and seem like they need some help or want to raise awareness for a thing that sounds cool, we'll mention it on here. But you can go to facebook.com/impactcandc, and that's that'll get you to an info that you want, or search for it on gofundme.com. It's Impact Comics in Grove City, Ohio. This episode is David Cross returning to the Nerdist Podcast. He has written and directed and produced a film called Hits, which is geniusly available on BitTorrent February 13th. It's amazing and rad that he is putting the movie on BitTorrent. So get it on BitTorrent starting February 13th. Then share your media. When you find stuff like Cross's movie that you can get on BitTorrent, share it as much as possible so that people know, because you are the platform. You're empowered. As we get into the Nerdist Podcast number 634, I would also like to let you know that the second half of this podcast was brought to you by MeUndies. Go to MeUndies.com. No joke, I'm actually wearing them now, and it's not for a promotional stunt. It's more for a stunt that I like comfort around my junk. Is that a terrible thing to say? It shouldn't be, because you got junk too, and you probably want it to be comfortable. So it is literally, there was only one place that I would buy underwear from before, because I couldn't find the right kind of boxer briefs that I liked. And so MeUndies sent some, and now I'm throwing out the old ones and just getting MeUndies, because it feels good, all right? I'm embarrassed talking about it, but it feels really good. They have styles for both men and women, and the designs are great. So go to MeUndies.com/Nerdist to get 20% off your first order and free shipping. Save even more when you buy a pack of them. That's MeUndies.com/Nerdist. Here's the podcast number 634 with David Cross. Katie, roll the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
No sympathy for you, young lady.
Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
That was it. That was the whole Dave Cross podcast.
Welcome back to the program, Mr. Cross.
I think my watch stopped.
What?
Yeah. It did. Fucking hell. I just replaced the battery in this thing.
Now, what if you looked up and we were all just frozen in place?
but the sound is still coming out. Son of a bitch.
You can hear my thoughts.
Oh, that's it. All right.
Maybe it was the weather. You know, we're not used to this kind
of... Oh, that's what it is. The watch got scared.
The watch got scared. Yeah. Your watch has been in L.A. too long. It's acclimated to the climate.
And we were saying because there was a... it thundered, apparently. Everybody's talking about it. It's all over the internet. And, it's like... 16 dead as thunderclap rocks the Southland.
Heart attacks everywhere.
Apocalypse. Fuck. Oh, no, I may have commented on the fact that it was thundering, and that's very uncharacteristic of our fine LA. Meanwhile, the rest of the country is immobile. And we're like, what's happening? Yeah. The skies are turning on us.
But that's the thing. They're not immobile. They just, you know, whatever the weather is, they just get on with it.
Right.
And, oh, there we go. I got my watch back. What time is it?
It is 4:06.
Great. I guess all it needed was a little bit of winding love.
Do you live here now, or do you live in New York?
Well, I try to live in New York, yeah. But I pretty much, for the last several years, I'm pretty much evenly split through between New York, London, and L.A. So L.A., like, if I'm not working here, my wife is often working here, so if I'm not working, then I got to come out and be here. And now I, like I was telling Jonah, for the last couple weeks, or month or so, like I am out here for a week riding, I go home for a week, come back out here for another week. I could do the whole Virgin America safety music video.
The music video which the first time I'm sure they played it, they were like, guys, we've got a hit here. Yeah. And the 30th time
I love Virgin, but I'm I'm literally on there 4 times every 7 days. And it's just it's in my sleep, that fucking thing.
Who's your favorite, the little Asian girl, or is it
the Matrix?
Now, will you to the rap beat? your eyes are glued to the flat screen, digging to the rap scene. A mask will fall. Don't worry, oxygen flows through your head and your nose. And if you're traveling with somebody else, like a child, for instance, whatever. It's
and then there's like a lot.
Before you something assistance, right? Yeah.
Before you something assistance.
No, that's
still now. Under your seat, there's a life vest.
Robot.
In first class, it's located under your armrest. Whatever. God. It's like 7 or 8 minutes.
And for the 0.1% of you who've never operated a seatbelt before.
I mean, really? Okay, yeah. It goes like this.
I remember someone tried to start a stink because the original version of that was the animated sequence, and it was like a matador.
Yeah.
And there's people trying to say that was offensive towards Latinas.
Oh, come on.
Yeah, there was
a matador Spanish.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, I know.
Are you sure?
So why don't just delete that person?
I came across it. It wasn't something I saw.
Well, you know, the previous safety announcement was...
It was that one.
It was the animated one.
With the matador, yeah.
Oh, I always...
And he was with the bull.
I only just heard it.
Yeah, because you're in first class all the
Well,
time.
Matt...
You're blind.
That's right, you're dealing with that.
You're
blind to poverty.
We got to cut that out. Quish has been trying to keep the fact that he's blind secret for so long.
He's been doing pretty good.
But that was just the dry voice before the guy who sounded like he couldn't be bothered to do the thing.
Yes,
for the point 0.001, you never.
Carl's Jr.
It goes
voice.
Like this, you fucking idiot! It would very much.
Well, they make even more. They make it. They're even more derisive in this music video. One, she rolls her eyes.
Yes.
And she's got her hands, you know, akimbo on her hips. Like, really? Okay. What? So at some point, there is somebody who hasn't worn their seatbelt, and they'd like to know, asshole.
Seatbelts don't work like car seatbelts. You have to lift a buckle. Yeah. You hit a button in a car.
Now, in case we must evacuate, we got a plan of attack.
the lights will light on your dun dun. Oh God! I go home tomorrow. I'm gonna have to hear it again.
You're gonna start getting the shakes before you have to get on that plane.
Why don't you just put some headphones on and not look at the screen?
You can't go past the. I mean, I can put headphones on, but you can't. It's really loud. They jack up the volume.
True. Yeah. It's totally true. It makes me kind of miss the. Delta had that redheaded lady for a while who would go, smoking is not allowed.
But now I feel like Delta switches it out every month with
I love that Delta guy. He is, you know, I grew up in the South, and he is the epitome of that kind of white Baptist kind of like, his voice is like this. We are so pleased to have y'all on Delta, where our, you know.
He's talking about the people.
What is his name?
Richard something?
Yeah, it's like Richard. My grandfather founded this airline on chairman
CEO
Delta.
Of Delta. Oh. Yeah, my great grandfather founded Richard the peanut. Richard Anderson.
Richard Anderson.
Absolute perfect southern name.
Him. Yes.
Yeah. My name
Thank you so much for flying the friendly skies of Delta.
Are you guys writing? Are you writing Mr. Show right now? No,
I'm doing a podcast. no. I'm out in Hollywood.
What?
Wait. Hollywood Center Studios.
You're really present.
home of Mad TV.
Yep. Did you work here? Did you work on Mad?
I was a consultant for their first couple months, yes.
Okay.
And they took, they were at odds with me immediately. They hired me for some reason. Yeah. And then any of my notes, they just dismissed and they really didn't care for.
Blaine Kapach, who writes on At Midnight with us, he has my favorite David Cross at Mad TV story where they're discussing Nicole Sullivan character. With the, I think it was the lady that was at the hairdresser or like the makeup counter lady or something like that, and they were talking about the thing that she would always say, and then Blaine describes you going, "That's not really a character, that's actually a character trait," and then the EP just going, "All right, moving on," just totally bullying.
Yeah, they did.
It's a very valid note.
They brought me in. They paid me some good money to come in and sort of be at the writers' pitch stuff and give notes. And they really, and not when I say they, it's the it was the two guys. There was.
Fax and Adam,
and it was Adam who really didn't care for me. I think if I remember that correctly, the taller of the two, the Jewier one, and there was an early sketch about people who, and it was a bad sketch about like bums who go to fine dining restaurants and then eat out of the they're like foodies but they're bums and they go to the dumpster diving, and they're talking and it was and I can't remember where the sketch went but it just sort of made fun of homeless people and I'm hardly PC but I was like come on guys there's a bigger thing here you know you want to make fun of McDonald's for throwing out all this food or something there's something more to this than simply let's make fun of homeless people dumpster diving and that was one of my first notes when we were talking about it was one of the first sketches pitched and they saw me, I think, as just some snotty, elitist, Mr. Show asshole, liberal bullshit. And it was weird. It was a strange confrontational.
When did they start? I can't remember.
95, I think.
So that's like right in the middle of Mr. Show then.
It would have been, it would have been sort of probably when we were waiting because we had a lot of downtime. HBO never, literally every single year, they would wait to the last day to let us know whether we were picked up. And you know, your manager goes out and finds you some work in between and they're like, oh, you want to consult on Mad TV? Sure, sounds great. And sure. I knew, you know, Blaine and Patton were there and they're like, this will be great. I mean, I was clearly wrong.
What's the weirdest job that you've ever gotten dropped into because they were aware of you? Like, oh, Dave Cross, he's someone we should probably work with. And you get there and you realize they have no idea who you are or what your voice is and you should not be there.
The immediate thing that's – this may not – be what you're talking about, but I got booked to do stand-up at St. Louis University. And it was one of the worst gigs, one of the most unsettling gigs. I got picked up. And, you get these gigs, and the colleges usually pay pretty well. They're not good audiences, but you just go, whatever. It's probably, there's a 50-50 chance it'll suck, but that's fine. They're going
to
pay.
And it doesn't matter if anyone shows up or not, because have to spend
the
money.
It's not a discerning audience at all, because it's free, and it's like you're in a room, and you can literally watch people pass by the open door and kind of poke in and go, no. But it's fine. You go, look, they're going to give me 10 grand to come in and, do an hour and a half. Great. All right, whatever. And so I flew in, and I get picked up by the kids, and I'm riding back to the gig from the airport, and I'm doing what I usually do, which is asking questions about the town, about the school, just little information. And so I'm like, what's the school like? Tell and describe it for me. Oh, it's great. It's a fun school. It's kind of medium size, and it was America's first Jesuit school. And he goes on. I'm like, well, I'm sorry, what? I'm in the back seat, and there's a guy and girl in the front. I'm like, I'm sorry, but you said this is a Jesuit school? Yeah, it was one of the first father. And I said. You guys know, are you familiar with my act? Your stand-up? No, you're the chicken pot pie guy, right? From Just Shoot Me?
Oh.
I was like, yeah, you do stand-up, right? Yeah, of course, that's why I'm here. So that's that, whatever, that's not the biggest deal, And we get into this room that doesn't have a stage. Like, they got those risers and set them up. They kind of created a stage. And it's all metal folding chairs. And there's 300 of them with this little kind of row in the middle where they created an aisle. And they just set them all up. So it's not a theater, in other words. And I go up on stage, and I have my table with a pitcher of water and a glass on it. And I go up and I start doing my act, and I very rarely do I alter it. It's just like, all right, well, this is what it is. And fairly early on, there was Jesus stuff and people. Oh, I also have to tell you that there's no exit behind me. The only exit is a door in the corner. Kind of like if I'm center stage, it would be if I'm looking out, it would be northwest. And it was just a single door that opens, and it wasn't even a double door. So I start doing this stuff, and then people start leaving. They're kind of oddly not rude in the sense nobody's heckling, but they just start leaving. Like, we're not hearing this. We don't want to hear this. But everybody leaving at the same time, and I'm talking about hundreds of people, and it's the chairs are scraping, and they're not doing it on purpose. It's just a bunch of people. They're bottlenecking at the
oh my God.
The door. But about 60 people are into it and start moving up front. And it got really creepy where a guy came up on stage, and he was really confrontational, staring at me. He took the water, poured it into the glass, and drank, chugged the whole thing. Like, that was his Christian fuck you to me.
He blessed the water before he got up.
Should have turned it into wine.
In his belly. And it was really just off-putting. I can't put into words how uncomfortable it was, and just the murmuring and trying to do a set. It was almost like anti-heckling, but it was really effective in throwing me off. But then a bunch of people sat up, like, go ahead, do it. This is great. But they were clearly the minority. But that's an example of getting hired for something where, like, you clearly don't know what I do.
I performed at that university, and they, right before, because I went to Jesuit high school, and so they, I was like, oh, and they said before, they said, like, your language can be PG, but, don't say anything about priests, and don't say anything about, like, nothing. And I was like, okay. I mean, I didn't really care. I didn't really have anything anyway. So I was like, man, that's fine. But then in the course of the show, I see the student who, because there's always a student person. It's like a student
body organization that mm-hmm. brings you in and books you.
Right.
And
the activities
yeah, director or whatever. And I just sort of felt like I was kind of being hawk-eyed by her a little bit just to make sure I didn't. So that naturally was kind of like, I see you staring at me, and she's staring at me because I'm – and so I started explaining, like, I was asked not to say anything. And then so, of course, some people aren't. It's like, do it! Yeah. You know? So I was like, no, I don't want to – I you know, she said – I wasn't saying it to get them to coax me into doing it. I was like, no, I was asked not to. I shouldn't have brought this up. Do it! Like, everyone seems way on board. And so – I was like, all right, well, I'll just tell this stupid joke that, you know, I was like, my Latin teacher told me this. So if a priest told me this, the other priest can't be offended. But like, it was just some dumb joke about, like, you know, why is a priest like a Christmas tree? They have balls for decoration. Like, something stupid like that. But it really, like, 60% of the audience was just like, oh. Like, they were really – I was like, but you asked me to do this.
Well, maybe they went, oh, because the joke's not very good.
Okay, David, I understand that. I expressed it as, I mean, this was told to me. I know the difference between that's a bad joke and you shouldn't have said what you just said.
I'm not so sure.
All right, David, I don't appreciate
it. Well, what was the ride back to the airport like for you, David?
It really shook me, and I remember coming back to – and no, they wouldn't talk to me.
Uh-huh.
They wow. just iced me. And I got back, and I remember going to my bar at the time was 7B in New York, and I and my favorite bartender there, Jay, and I was just like – I came in, and I didn't even go home. I was just like, I got to get a drink. This is – and I sat down. I just had a couple shots and beers, and I was like, man, that was the craziest thing. I just went through and just explained it to him. And, that was it.
Jesus.
But I
rattled enough to go from the airport to the bar.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I went home. I like, had my bag, my little Jesus. Duffel bag. Yeah.
I also, but you know, I mean, I guess that's their prerogative. It's their school. They can do, you know, like it's a private thing if that's what they want, but it just like maybe do a little research mm-hmm. before you have people
of course.
Come to your school or organization.
Yeah.
So that you suffered from the same thing that Patton suffered from, which is, oh, I saw him on a sitcom.
Yep.
He's probably that goofy character.
Yes. Yeah. That's happened a couple times, but this was pre Shut Up, You Fucking Baby. So it would have been – I mean, there was access to my TV sets, and I had a half-hour special on HBO. Oh, and I had an hour special. That's right. So there was plenty to look at, and certainly my – you know, I've been doing that kind of stuff for a long time, so.
That doesn't happen anymore, though.
No. I don't get hired.
I just think they're getting an hour of Tobias Funke.
Yeah.
Do you have a place in London?
No, you know, production will pay for, unfortunately, the exchange rate is so bad, but but I'll, you know, they'll put me up. And I usually go like, well, now I do Airbnb, but before you just go on like, you know, with the equivalent of like a Craigslist or yeah. a placement thing where you get a furnished flat there, you know.
Did you consider just moving there for a while?
If this other project I have it pending with Sky goes, then I will have to move there. And I talked to my wife about it, and it's like, there's just no way around it. We're going to have to, because I'm going to have to write it, direct it, and do all the post on it. And it's going to have to be there. So it's kind of a cool thing. And we were also thinking, what if, I have no idea how this works, and this is out of ignorance, but like, what if we have a baby that's born in England? Do we get all the benefits yeah. of a social democrat, you know, country? And also dual citizenship and
sexually transmitted healthcare.
Not just, huh?
You create a baby, which basically then like gang jumps see. You into the to their healthcare
like
system.
I could maybe glom off of the baby, that
right.
stupid selfish baby, and we can get some free healthcare.
You get some free healthcare.
I've had. I know other people have different stories, and some of them are tragic and terrible, but I have had amazing experiences with the healthcare system over there. I mean, just the things that would so bum you out, knowing what it's like here and how much things cost. Like, one thing, I had an emergency root canal. It's a long story. I won't go into it. It was going through extreme pain, didn't know what was going on. Ended up having to get an emergency root canal. going into the dentist. So it's not, I don't have a regular dentist. Right. They just said, oh, you got to go to this place. The nearest place is, you know, Bloomsbury, and go down the street and here it is. And went in, cause I didn't know what I needed at that point. And I was in a lot of pain. And the guy who was supposed to look at it wasn't, there. And so there was another dentist who wasn't affiliated with this dentist practice who was down the street, and they did some whoever was preliminarily looking, it was like, oh my god, this is advanced. And they had to go get this other dentist who was just doing something routine, so he was able to leave. He came over and they did some x-rays, and he goes, you need an emergency root canal right now. I'm canceling my other thing. I'm gonna do it over here. So he gives me the anesthesia and does all this stuff. And he does the minimal amount of stuff that needed to be done to remove the rotten tooth and clean it out and fill it, basically, so that when I got back to the States, I could live with it for a couple months and then the finish it off, get a crown or whatever. So all this shit happened. He's taking the x-rays, explaining things, does the emergency root canal, puts the rod in, does all that stuff, sets it. And the bill for that was 68 pounds. I will repeat that. 68 pounds. And I walked in off the street like, ah! You know, I mean, somebody had called over from production and go, you know, they knew somebody whose sister was worked at this thing and went in. And they actually got a guy from down the street who gave
still up like $105.
68 pounds for all of that. And then I had to get the last bit, the last part done, and I was in L.A., and I don't remember what the cost was. It was really just measuring and then ordering the crown and cementing it on. Mm-hmm. And this was somebody who was my wife's family dentist, and I'm kind of pulling this number out of my ass. I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was something like $2,700.
Jesus.
Like, and I was in there. I was in and out in about 35, 40 minutes.
Jesus.
And this thing was hours and hours of major dental surgery. 68 pounds.
Fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it is a good idea to just move over there and glom off your kids if you're going to.
But then I'm going to, because I want to take advantage of it, I'll have to give myself leukemia or something like that.
Yeah.
Just to feel good about
it's
it.
It's like if you see a parking space, you're like, well, I don't need to be here, but there's parking spaces. Well, so I got to park here because I can't let this
happen. So I'll get
sit and play Candy Crush. Yeah.
Right. Are you performing in London a lot when you're over there?
Yeah, I try to do sets. I mean, I'm usually pretty busy there. My days are filled with either writing, or when I go back in May, it'll be pre-production, then production, and those are, you know, those are 12-hour days and long. But when I'm doing like pre-production and post on stuff, then yeah, I go and do sets. They have tons of, you know, alternative fun gigs over there, you know, that you can hop on, and I know a bunch of people at this point, and it's fun. The audiences are great. My experience with London crowds are the highs are higher and the lows are lower.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they're more express. They can give you more, but they can also tear you down more.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's really true. But that's sort of if you do like a set at the Comedy Store or something like that. But if you're doing like the alternative rooms, they're all cool. They're fun.
Yeah.
Very meltdown-ish.
Oh, know? Good. Good, good, good. Yeah, I've always wanted
Although
to spend...
That might be the greatest audience on the planet.
Yeah. Oh, the Meltdown audience?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It kind of spoils you for
it's ridiculous. Really
everything else.
I mean, it's great, but and L.A. is just kind of a notch above New York audiences, and New York audiences are great, but L.A. is just fucking top. The audiences
everywhere
are so good.
Right, like, it's like there's a ton of shows now, and everyone has a crowd for it, and all the crowds are great.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
I'm glad to hear that, because that was really not always the case. And I still tell people when someone's like, oh, I want to do stand-up, I was like, go to New York. Like, don't come to L.A. first. It's a bad place to learn comedy.
But do you mean like in the standard rooms or the alternative rooms?
I think in the alternative rooms, just because it always feels to me that in New York, you can perform more times in a night, and there's more just regular people. There's just more regular people that come to shows. I always here. I feel like you got to drive, you got to park. Not
for sure,
you know.
Yeah.
But if it,
unless you're already there because you saw that spot earlier,
it's true. but I haven't done. I haven't been doing the LA scene really for a couple of years, and so maybe it's gotten a lot better.
I mean, don't get me wrong. New York is great, but LA is just super great.
I'm glad to hear. I've never heard anyone say that before. I'm glad to
hear
that.
Yeah, it's
especially you. I've never heard you say anything
positive about Los Angeles.
Oh my God, what's happening to you?
I've really gone Hollywood.
So getting some perspective.
So is it? I'm sure. Are people bugging you about Mr. Show stuff?
Yeah, but that's fine and understandable. I mean, Paul F. Tompkins tweeted that photo,
right.
And then I put something on the Kickstarter page. I had a Kickstarter thing going, and so between those two things, you know, everybody. But it's good. It's encouraging. Everybody's excited about it, and I can't. Unfortunately, I certainly had hoped by this point that we'd be able to say something, but we can't just yet. It's just not.
Sure.
We're not sure where we'll do it, but I'm 99% sure we will do something, and it'll be, you know, hopefully. When we have something solid, we'll say it. But it'll be in the spring. Out here, and we're hoping to do. We will do something
good. Yeah, because awesome. Ackerman was on a couple weeks ago, and it hasn't posted yet. But he just sort of said, like, well, you know, we just kind of got in a room and just was seeing what that was like again. And
we
was
all
like,
slipped into our old roles. And
yeah, he said everyone kind of fell into their old roles, but he also
it
said,
was immediate. It was, I mean, in a really fun way. We didn't know what to expect, and we've had three of those kind of writers' rooms meetings now, and that first one, and I haven't seen these guys in the same place since I think we did the. Commentary. No. It was when we did the audio read for Hollywood Says No, that was like, you know, that was a while ago, and we had scripted stuff, but sitting down as writers and, you know, presenting pieces and getting notes, it was immediately right back into the same roles and same. It was so much fun. I haven't laughed that much in years. And it was a lot of fun.
But Scott also said that in addition that what came with that was that, you know, he said, but no one was there weren't really any insecurities anymore. Like everyone was totally comfortable. You know, everyone's done well, and everyone felt like it didn't really seem like everyone was fighting to get there.
Not at all. I mean, and Scott's probably made the biggest leap, you know. I mean, his Mr. Show was basically his first kind of real gig.
Yeah.
And since then, you know, obviously is you know, well established in many different areas. Have you been to his restaurant?
Which one?
The Comedy Bang Bang Shrimp. Spicy.
So yeah, you know, we all came together, you know, and since we last met, obviously we've matured, and you know, there's wives and or children, and you know, it's just a different thing. But we were immediately right back into, you know, it's like when you go home for Thanksgiving and you know you got two people in their 40s arguing like they're teens, you know.
Do you feel that? I mean, is it something that you would want to do regularly, or is it just something that you guys are like, yeah, we'll just, you know, we'll get together and see how it goes once, and then...
I mean, don't take this to mean anything other than an answer to your question as you know, not that this will happen or we're going to try to make it happen. I'd like to do this, you know, annually or every year and a half. Part of the problem is I don't live here, and I don't want to live here. And you know, I have a place in the city in New York, and I have a place upstate, and I much prefer being there. But I'd like to find. And Bob's going to be crazy busy with Saul,
right.
And I'd like to be able to know though in advance, like, yeah, we're going to carve out these 4 months or 3.5 months, whatever it becomes, however it manifests itself, and go, yeah, every year, every 14 months, I'm going to be in L.A. for 4 months, and we're going to work and have fun and do this thing, and then I get to go back and do whatever I'm doing.
That'd be awesome.
So, but I assume that that's Well, if I keep asking questions, you're not going to be able to answer them. If it all works out, that would be the way that it could potentially work.
Yeah, I mean, if everybody else can make it work in their schedules, and you know, we both have you know, some pretty specific projects that we have to do. You know,
right.
And you know, Bob shoots his thing in Albuquerque. You know, so, and he's there for 6 months a year, so or whatever it is, but.
So when did you start? So did Hits? Are you distributing Hits? Are you giving it away online? Did I read that properly?
It's pay what you want.
Okay,
and it'll be on BitTorrent. And this is the first. How do I word this? It's the first movie that's available on BitTorrent that is legal,
right?
I guess, or
right.
That is, I don't know how that shit works, but we're the first kind of. I don't know. What do you call it? What is that? It's
you've sanctioned it. You've like you're sanctioning. Like, you're like please.
Yeah. We're working in conjunction with them.
You're
to
purposely using
it
as a distribution channel, as
yes.
opposed to yeah. the audience using it as a distribution.
Yes,
channel.
That's the best way to put it. And it wasn't my idea. It was the producer's idea, and they went to BitTorrent, and they were I was blown away by how enthusiastic they were, and like. 3 days later, they had a 16-page PowerPoint presentation of how it would work, and they had all these ideas. Like,
wow.
it was crazy. I mean, I can, you know, if I had my computer, I could show it to you. It's just page after page, and we're going to do this and this and this. And
like they've been thinking and working about like this idea for a while, and finally someone came to them with it.
Maybe, or they're just perhaps, or they just you know, got scrambled and were like, yeah, we have this opportunity because we did go to them.
Yeah.
But they were so on board like immediately and had all these great ideas.
That's really
and,
cool.
And then the other...
They're like moonshine runners after Prohibition. They're like, whoa, we're ready. Here we go.
And then... then the pay what you want in the theaters Kickstarter idea to self-distribute came a little later after that.
Cool.
Yeah.
So when are you going to distribute it in theaters? Is it going to
be February 12th?
Okay.
Yeah. And that is also pay what you want.
So how does that work with the theater? You buy a ticket online for whatever you want, and then it's redeemable at the theater, or
I don't work at the theater, Chris. I
well,
can't tell you.
You must have thought about this.
I don't know if you buy it online. I don't know how that would work. But I guess it'll be like how you go to a movie in whatever town, and that's the really encouraging thing is like right now I think we were at 37 cities towns, and by the time this thing airs, you know, it could be at 50. Who knows? But the list is really like places this would never play. I don't even think about it, like Iowa City. You know, this movie would never play in Iowa City. So it's going to be. It'll play all over the place, and we're telling people to, you know, contact your local theater if you want it to come, and then they'll contact the producers. And we go in with enough money to rent the theater and pay for insurance and staff and all the stuff, you know, to pay for a modicum of marketing and promotion for it so people know it's there. And then the pay what you want will hopefully offset those costs, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I suppose you just do it the way you normally do it.
It's kind of a brilliant idea because it's one of those movies where people are like, I really want to see that. I don't know if I have 20, 40 bucks to spend for me and my partner, but I could spend 10.
Well, gay people are not allowed if that's what you're implying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
so they can stay home and save their $40.
you changed a lot after St. Louis University.
it was 9/11. 9/11, really. I'm the Dennis Miller of Mies. I mean that's the idea, and you know the Kickstarter fund is kind of supplementing that thing, so that hopefully we don't lose any money. Nobody's under the illusion that we're gonna make a you know, make money off this thing, but this model allows it to at least to hopefully not lose any money, but also go out there to a ton of places that it would normally never be. And, fuck, what was I going to say?
Distributing, putting in
the
theaters?
Oh, yeah. What you have to remember is that sales agents and distributors take a cut. So now we don't have to pay that money. So we don't have to, jack up the price of the ticket or whatever just so we don't lose money because the distributors are taking a cut and so are sales agents. So that we've just gotten rid of that, the middlemen, as it were.
Yeah. Did you like the process of directing a film?
Oh, yeah. It was great.
Really? Because a lot of people... This is your first movie that you've directed.
Yeah.
Most people kind of have the experience of like it was a war zone and it was intense and it was
not at all. I mean one of the first ideas when I went into it when I knew I was going to do it is to and I know it's important from being on the other side of things and I've produced a bunch of stuff too, so that's part of the learning process is to have a fun, loose set. There's no reason to have anybody be an asshole, and I don't want to work with anybody. I don't care how brilliant they are. They can be the best sound guy, the best DP, whatever. If you're an asshole, you're not welcome on the set. And, it's a long shoot for nobody's getting paid anything. We're it's a tough shoot, and it's low budget. And, the two things, that was part of the credo. And then also another important thing was I want to make sure that catering is good. I want to make sure we put good money, some of this budget into, it doesn't have to be, fine dining, but I just don't want all these people are busting their ass for no money. We should have really nice food for them. We should
To anyone who's making a short film or a low-budget film,
have something.
Catering is the thing.
You want it something that like those hobos would go after in the trash.
Yeah.
But it is the one That's thing funny. That the crew, they go, oh, wow. Like they will talk about how good the catering is. And if the food is good, they will work extra hard and be happy.
Yeah, and you're asking a lot from a lot of people. And we have some fairly, we have some really talented bigger names in the movie, not huge names obviously, but people who are, have worked on $60 million budget, films or TV shows, and you just want, it's the one thing you can do. So do it, just, give them, make sure craft services is good and you've got, your catering is good. And, it's a thing. If you have a small budget, you can actually affect that kind of, happiness and satisfaction and because the inverse is also true, because if it's shitty food then you're fucking cranky and now you're even crankier for the second half of the day. And but it was really fun. We had a great cast and crew, and it was there was never any real tense shit ever. And I'm a pretty happy-go-lucky guy on the set, and we shot up where I live, and so I knew the area and people had been there and people were crashing at my house. And, and I think it's kind of reflected, it was fun. It was quite a bit of fun. And you're working with really great, actors who are skilled at improv, and it was a blast. I enjoyed it.
What's your favorite? Do you have a favorite thing in terms of performing and directing and writing and producing?
Catering, I don't. I mean, I think I would say that the thing that when everything's done, the thing I'm most satisfied with is usually writing. Like that is to me the hardest of the things to do and to do well. And I'm usually that's the thing I'll have the most pride in is the writing of something. But as far as favorite thing to do. I mean, they're all good. They're all fun. I've always felt like acting, like when I did Arrested Development, which I didn't write, that's like paid vacation. I get to go have fun with these other talented, fun people and this fun character to do. And I just did Pitch Perfect 2. I did a week on that. I did this crazy, not crazy, but just very over-the-top character. And, I know the director, I'm friends with the director, and I'm friends with a bunch of the other people that I got to work with. And it's not anything I would, I'd seek, and it's not anything that, it's not a movie that I would go, oh, I got to be a part of that. But I did it because I had so much fun, and I, you know, I didn't. All I had to worry about was the memorizing the words and hitting my marks, and they were very encouraging for improv, which is, I assume, why I'm hired for a lot of things. And I just had, it was a week of fun. It was Reggie Watts and Jason Jones and Joe Latrulia and all, Adam from Workaholics, and just a bunch of. It was a blast. I had a lot of fun doing it.
That's cool, because a lot of times people get weird going and saying other people's words if they're writers, because they can't get out of their head. It's like, well, this isn't how I would write this.
Well, I still have that kind of I'll respectfully say, hey, I had some thoughts on this, and I don't think anybody's ever. I can't remember an occasion where anybody went. No, I'm not interested in your notes, you know?
Except at Mad TV.
I did do one movie where I would stray a little bit, and the director would go, no, just do it the way it is. And I thought that was odd because there was nothing about – the character wasn't a major character, and there wasn't a lot of exposition. So I was like, why do I have to say it this way? But okay, you know, it was weird. But outside of that, you know, you just sort of – go have fun, and they cut what they use what they want to use, and you know, so. But probably directing is the most satisfying at the end of the day, I guess. Acting's fun, writing I feel the proudest of, but directing's like, wow, that's my thing, live or die with it, you know.
Yeah,
I get to make the decisions.
You really are making the thing.
Yeah, and it's from a script that I wrote, so it's. I have yet to direct anything that I didn't write, so
yeah,
that might be a different story.
And the movie is essentially about people's obsession with.
It's sci-fi, time trippy. It's about the ascension of a god called Jupiter. He rises.
I think you're
up.
No, that's a Wachowski's film. You directed the Hits.
Wait, what?
Your name's David Cross.
You're David Cross. You're not a Wachowski.
I heard people walk out of that at Sundance.
Out of Jupiter Ascending?
Yeah. I heard the people
at Sundance? It played at Sundance? Yes. No wonder they walked out. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to show you this tight little indie film.
Yeah. Well, where's the Glockenspiel?
Needs more ukulele.
I thought this was going to look like one extended Prius commercial.
Yeah. These aren't weird jobs.
Wait, what'd you ask?
Hits is basically, from what I can tell, it seems to be about people's obsession with social media and likes and views and fame.
Like mostly about fame, but using social media as a facilitator of that. But it's about a broader sense, it's kind of about the culture today and the obsession with fame and the not necessarily obsession, but just the desire for it and the fame as an end all be all kind of.
And how it's not real.
Well, it is real. It is because of all the different conduits to it. You can be famous from YouTube or Vines or tweets or. Failing at a singing competition on TV or getting kicked in the nuts. That will make you famous. Or blowing a guy and then the tape leaks and now you have a multi-billion-dollar cottage industry with your sisters, you know? It's that thing. And then the people that look up to that thing is basically what it's about.
I mean, just off the top of your... Just spitballing, like, theoretically.
Yeah, like, if you're say your mother's a whore and has no compunction about exploiting their children for their own gain, and then one of those children is friends with a socialite who got famous and stayed famous because a sex tape leaked and then decided, to herself, like, what if I blow this guy and have him fuck me and then the tape accidentally leaks and I'll leak it myself? And
sure.
and then to extend that into a, where you brand yourself and you have literally no discernible talent. And then children look up to that. And somewhere there's, let's say, a teenage mother, gets a show called, we'll call it Teen Mom. And, sure. and that they become famous, and then their fame starts to fade, and then they go, oh, what can keep me in the news? Maybe I'll let this guy fuck me in the ass, and then that tape will accidentally leak. You know, so that's it, America's the greatest country in the world.
Just some of these hypothetical.
It's a hypothetical.
Yeah. We're just throwing ideas. I mean, if you were going to achieve fame in certain, those could potentially be ways, but no one would do that. I mean, that's not a. Those wouldn't be real.
No. One of the the most infuriating review I got from one of the trades after it screened at Sundance, and it screened well, audience wise. But one of the guys said, I think it was a guy from Paste magazine. I have to get this right, but he knocked it for being the end, the culmination wasn't plausible. And I'm paraphrasing, but it was basically that it was not plausible. And I thought that was just insane. I mean, like, you're so wrong. And then after about 4 months after we screened at Sundance, this won't make sense if you haven't seen the movie, but the Clive and Bundy shit happened. And that is a direct thing from the movie. I mean, obviously we wrote it and shot it way before that happened, but that reviewer from Pace can suck my dick. the idea, and I shouldn't say, I don't know if it's Pace, I think it's the guy from Pace, but this idea that he's telling people, yeah, it's not that good of a movie because it's just increasingly implausible. Like, I mean, we disagree. We absolutely disagree, but the tagline for this, for the movie on the poster is, based on a true story that hasn't happened yet.
Right.
I think that guy is just out of his fucking mind that he thinks. And I love that the Clive and Bundy thing happened roughly 4 or 5 months after the movie screened. And he wrote that review like, well, there's part of it coming true, you fucking dick. Telling people not to see my movie.
But again, this is a hypothetical. I mean, these are all just...
That's not hypothetical.
No, that's actually a real thing. That's actually a real thing that happened. So when the movie screens, at what point are you going to travel? Are you going to go around the country when it screens and do Q&As? And are you
going to
travel?
Unfortunately, there was some unfortunate miscommunication. It's nobody's fault. It was just miscommunication. But I am locked into doing Q&A at the Nighthawk theater in Brooklyn when it opens up, and I really wanted to go to one of the smaller towns and just show up unannounced, but I can say this: on February 13th, which is a Friday, I will be at a theater that is not in New York and not in LA. That is one of the smaller theaters, and I'm not going to tell anybody at all. And I'm going to show up, and we'll do a Q&A, and maybe take everybody out for pancake breakfast. I'm not going to say where; I haven't even picked the place yet. But I will. So then I have to fly back to. I was hoping to do more of the smaller towns, but then I have to fly back because I also have to do Saturday night at the Village East in New York.
Oh, okay.
Which kind of makes me a bit of a hypocrite because I kept saying, like, I don't want to do New York. And I told people, like, I'm just going to go to these small places, but I can only go to one. And it's going to have to be on Friday, the 13th. But, yeah.
Is your wife working on something at the moment? Or are you guys able to travel together? Or do you guys have to spend?
She just finished her first movie, and she it's such a bummer. Because we thought we were going to be in New York. I was going to be in New York. So she's doing all the post for her movie in New York. And because of the Mr. Show thing, I have to be out here.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, it's a
bummer. Why can't Paul and Bob and Scott and Brian, like, why can't they just go to New York? I don't understand.
I know. I can't get Brian to leave the valley. I can't get Bob to, to leave his kids for 5 minutes to Skype. It's not, I have to come here. It's that's how it is, and that's how it always will be. But
that's the way.
But yeah, so Amber is finished directing her first film, which she co-wrote, and she starts posting, I believe, like, I think it's quite literally the day I start on the Mr. Show thing officially, which will be mid-February.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Really, and she'll be able to come back and forth, but yeah, it sucks. It's a fucking bummer. And yeah, it's a bummer. Yeah. But she'll be, once I go to London on May 5th, and she should be, you know, close to getting it finished by then. And so she'll be in London with me for a couple months, which will be
that's
nice.
Good.
Yeah. At least on weekends, are you guys able to kind of find just a couple days here and there to meet up?
Well, she will. I mean, she'll be able to come, because you know what the editing process is. I mean, you can decide to be in there as much as possible, as you want, but there's still, you know, sometimes you look at stuff and you make notes and you have to walk away. It takes 3 days to implement those things, you know, as good as an editor as you can be with all the technology, it still takes a significant amount of time. So yeah, she'll come out. I don't think I'll have any time really, but she'll be able to come out here and there. But yeah, it's cool. Kind of sucks. But that's the biz.
Yeah.
But at a certain point I can understand why people are like, I don't want the biz anymore. I just want to hang out with the person. And
I had a meltdown. I mean, she tells it better because she was on the receiving end of the phone call. But I was in London over September and October writing the – we're doing a third series of Todd and Margaret. So I was over there writing the story. We had broken the stories back in July. I'd go there and spend, you know, 2 weeks and came back for a little bit. And I was looking at the possibility of doing – so I had Todd and Margaret, and then I had this other project that, you know, we – as I said, we went to Sky with it. And these are good things. Everything I'm describing is a good, you know, you want this. And it looked very – like Sky was really interested, and they because the show takes place in England, and I was going to co-write them, and I was going to direct them all, and all this, I was looking at, like, I'm never going to get home, and when am I fucking going to see you? This is, you know, these are all good things. Yeah, if they pick up the show, then what? You know, all these great, wonderful things. And I fucking started. I was also like had real trouble with jet lag and insomnia for the first week, and I was you know, struggling to write these scripts, and I was working on this other project. And again, all good things, all things you want. And but I was starting to, I was having a meltdown. But, you know, you just deal with it, and we're together when we can, and you know.
Well, you forget that you're a person, and you can only handle so much, like, asking your body to put out more energy.
Yeah.
And at a certain point, you will rebel.
But like, it would all be good if I just want my wife there. But part of the problem was I think she had told me, like, oh, this movie that she was going to do, not this movie that she directed, but this thing that she would act in, you know, that'll go during the summer. And it just fit in the calendar where, like, so the one time I could see you, the one time we can hang out, you're going to be on location in Australia. And I just started losing it. Like, you know, what if this show goes? I'm never, you know, all this. You have to move to London. I don't give a shit. You have to move to London. You
take
know?
Hollywood with you. I don't know.
What if she was like, no, fuck you. You have to move to Australia.
Well, that's not going to happen. No. I would, of course, go. But I would be in the middle of post on these other
things. Of course,
things,
yes.
So
yes.
I can't, you know, and it's just it sucks when your schedules are off, you know, and the thing about this business is it's feast or famine, you know, which I certainly wouldn't choose, but you know, you work your ass off and you work 6 day weeks, 10, 12 hour days. And, you know, and then, you know, you do this long project, you put all this time and energy into it, and then you don't work for 3 months.
Right.
Yeah. You know? And you're like, at the end of that project, like, I just need a month off. But 7 days into that month off, you're like, okay, I'm relaxed now. Let's, what else we got?
Never going to work again. Are you going to direct any of the third season of Todd and Margaret?
Mm-mm. No, I am actually giving the reins to this guy, more so than I did in the past. I was really hands-on. It was very collaborative. I was there for everything. I stayed in London for, you know, 9 months, and that part of the deal was I just can't do that. I can't. I love London. I love being here, but I don't want to be away from my wife and my dog and my house in New York. And so that was part of the process when we were meeting potential directors. And this guy's great. I'm very, very I think his last name is Hardwick.
With an E at the end.
You know, some of us.
Sir John Hardwick.
Yes.
But he's awesome.
You show up and it's just me with a monocle.
Hello, David.
You're just. Yes.
I don't know what.
I have to stop hiring directors via Craigslist. No, I'm very excited, and I'm really giving the reins over more than I ever have. So.
Yeah, it's fun.
Probably a good thing.
I think when you're younger, I think there's a feeling of like, I got to do everything, man. And then when you get older, you're like, you know, I don't have to do everything. And there are people who are competent in their ways.
Yeah. I mean, this thing is so fucking close to me, though. It's if it was a different project, I wouldn't feel that way. But for me, this is just about I can't take another, you know, extended period away from my wife. And I'm just getting too old. I feel like I'm missing. It just doesn't feel right. It's been years and years and years of... You know, can I just have a couple months of, you know, normalcy and being where I live and where I enjoy living? And I can, you know, that was one of the great things about Hits. I wrote it upstate, I shot it upstate, and then I did all the post in the city, you know, and I was home. It was like, I felt like I was home for the longest chunk I've had in years and years and years and years, you know?
Well, it, when people say, the idea that you expressed before about feast or famine, and people were like, why do you work all the time? Why don't you take a break? I'm like, because that's, you got to take the opportunities when you're getting them because they're not, they don't always, you know, fish don't always just hop into the boat, you know?
Well, that's what Amber was saying when, you know, this other show, we were looking at, they were excited about, and, you know, she was saying just that, like, no, you have to do this. You don't get, you know, this is an opportunity that is so rare that you can write, create, and direct your own show that could last for series. That could, it's a great idea. I don't want to say what it is, but it's this great, cool thing. And you have to do this. You have to fucking man up. And yeah, you'll eat dinner alone sometimes. And, you know, I seem to recall her, I might be imagining this. She said, you know, go. Get a prostitute, suck your dick, it's fine. She didn't say that. No. I'm trying to make it up so that I can get away with that later.
You didn't say that.
No, but I mean, she's like, you know, just it'll be fine. Don't worry about it. You have to do this thing though. You can't not do it. And I was being a baby. I had very little sleep, and I was like, you know, going back to my flat for, you know, the 20th meal alone by myself watching shitty English television. You know, where's my wife? Where's my dog?
Well, congratulations on the movie. And it comes out, I believe you said February
13th.
And
February 12th.
February 12th.
Which is a Thursday, is like the big, all the smaller town theaters, you know. It opens on February 12th, and then we'll extend in other theaters for the week.
Cool.
It's good counter programming for 50 Shades of Grey.
That's why I wrote this movie.
It's like 50 Shades of Grey, but without any of the...
Different types of hits.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because he beats her up and then fucks her a lot, right?
Isn't that what the movie is?
I don't know. I thought it was just Twilight
fan fiction.
I imagine the theme song is like, 50 Shades of Grey, ba-da-da-da-da-da, 50 Shades of Grey, ba-da-da-da-da-da, 50 Shades of Grey, ba-da-da-da-da-da, not 49, not 48, not 51, not 52, but 50 Shades of Grey. Yeah!
Enjoy your burrito.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.